Well, now, 2 days ago, AGL Energy, one of the eastern state's major energy companies, released a report that, though centred on humble electricity supply, as it were, had the sensational title of The Energy Market Death Spiral, which caught the eye, to say the least, amid all our debates about power bills and so on. Its subtitle is Rethinking Customer Hardship, and it turns out to be one of those reports that offers remarkable insights into the so-called two-speed economy. It also talks about some of the very latest Australian attitudes to money and to the exquisite challenges posed by our growing devotion to air conditioning especially and to extreme heating during cold snaps. What it does do is illustrate clearly why the politics around power prices is so emotional due to these extreme differences between households' capacity to pay higher prices. I'll let one of the authors of the report and the chief economist of AGL Energy, also Professor of Economics at Griffith University, Professor Paul Simhauser, explain further. Welcome to the program.
Good morning and thanks for having me on.
So how is it that a report on electricity prices is called a death spiral?
Yeah, it's one of those titles, isn't it? We sort of procrastinated over whether or not to issue it under that title. Look, there is actually the notion of a death spiral actually comes out of formal academic literature. Can you believe? We spotted an article written by a U.S. energy economist a year or two ago, speaking about the unspoken fear of all utility managers is a death spiral scenario. And what he was talking about was a situation where continually rising prices leads consumers to basically contract or reduce their level of consumption, but not at the time of year when it really counts, which is of course those very hot and cold days. And in our industry, when you have sort of rising peak demand but shrinking annual throughput, you still need to build new capacity because you can't store electricity. It's a little bit like building 20 harbour bridges to deal with, you know, sort of 10 days a year.
So what is the role of continually rising peak load demand as opposed to base energy demand?
Yeah, so peak load demand is what really sort of drives investment into our industry. And of course, right now, it's a very large part of the power price rises, certainly in Queensland, New South Wales and South Australia, are owing to those rapid run-ups in the new infrastructure that's there literally to deal with peak load. Just to give you an idea.
I can hear breakfast in the background, can I?
Yeah, that's my little 4-year-old having breakfast.
Right, good.
just to give you a really tangible example, in southeast Queensland, the electricity network there has a total value of about $8 billion. That's the cost of the poles and wires. Around about $900 million of that is used on 3.5 days a year.
Really?
Yeah. You can imagine the alternate uses of $900 million in our society. Lord knows what that would manage to buy us in terms of schools, roads, hospitals or whatever. But that's
really air conditioning we're talking about.
Yeah, that's right. And it needs to be paid for. So it gets put on the ground. It ends up, you know, sort of manifesting itself in higher prices. But the issue is, of course, with electricity, you can't have congestion like you do with road transport. Congestion in electricity means you have to turn the lights out, so to speak, well-known term, blackouts.
Yeah. And what your very interesting report does is talk about this conundrum where you've got a majority of households don't even notice really the price rises, although based on what we're getting in, I might add, to Saturday Extra from people, they are noticing the price rises. But lower income households, particularly with families, are really panicking about it.
Yeah, look, that's the one thing that really jumps out at us. When we actually sat back and looked at the demographics, we had a lot of help on this from KPMG's Bernard Salt, and through combining databases and crunching the numbers, we noticed that the households that appeared to be either were in hardship or appeared to be displaying signs of financial stress were congested in that age group between 30 and 50.
And with children, this is the family formation cohort. I'm just going to read. With children who are sort of two or more uncontrollable customers who were blissfully unaware and unmoved by the financial impact of their uncoordinated and in many cases simultaneous energy consumption decisions.
Yeah.
You can almost feel the tension in the homes just from your rather academic language there.
And look, I know just walking, I arrive home most nights of the week and I spend the first sort of minute or two that I'm here actually going around and turning off all the gadgets and lights that that my kids have managed to light up over the, you know, over the ensuing few hours. And it's just the nature, I guess, that, you know, we don't have much in the way of price signals to actually dampen that peak demand right now. So one of the, you know, I mean, one of the key policy recommendations we had was that, you know, electricity pricing really needs to be, you know, re-looked at, not with a with a view to making the industry more profitable. It's not about that at all. It's literally about sort of moving away from flat pricing that we currently experience into a sort of a peak and an off-peak price, so that there is a signal or effectively an arbitrage for households to move their consumption decisions, the ones that won't actually influence too much of their lifestyle, out of peak periods into off-peak periods, so they can actually save a dollar along the way. And in the process, of course, reduce that peak demand and reduce the requirement for new investment.
Incidentally, what proportion of the people you investigated were suffering real stress as a result of anxiety about the, you know, couldn't meet their bills?
Look, I guess when we sort of stood back and look at those who put their hands up and said we are in trouble, they're a very small percent. So it might be 0.03 of a percent of our 2.4 million households. But when we looked at more broadly at households that we felt were at least displaying some sort of sign of you know, financial constraint, we came up with about 16%.
That's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was a surprise. And and at the moment, I guess what they're doing with their, and if you take AGL as being, you know, we're roughly a quarter of the East Coast market. And if we're representative, and we think we are, then there's about 16% of customers who are sort of using us as a credit card without any sort of interest cost associated with it, if that makes sense.
No, what do you mean?
Just the time they're taking to actually pay their bills is lengthening to a point sort of well beyond what you would consider, you know, normal commercial practice.
So what just quickly, because we've only got about a minute and a half, what are the government policies that could help? What are the government policies that could backfire, in your view, trying to solve this?
Look, I think the first of all, we do need to sort of go down that path of rolling smart meters out and getting time use prices. That's the, I guess, you know, at the end of the day, we need to take some medicine to fix the disease. The faster we take the medicine, the faster we'll fix the disease. But it is medicine, and it will come at a cost again up front, but over the long term, it'll be very beneficial. Secondly, I think, you know, our current hardship policies as a country in relation to energy tend to be skewed towards pensioners and the medically ill and so on. And I'm not suggesting for a moment that we cease that, but I do think we've got a gaping hole in our hardship policy, energy hardship policies, and that there is nothing there directed at family formation stages. And of course, there's a good trigger for that in our national system through Family Tax Benefit Part A. Mm. That seems to me to, basically capture that demographic. And thirdly, I think anything we do, don't use electricity bills as the tax collection device, because it's known to be regressive. We need to find progressive sources of funding if we are going to provide assistance to households who really are struggling to make ends meet.
Mm. And we didn't even mention carbon tax. Thank you. Because it's not there, really. Paul Simshauser, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Absolute pleasure.
Paul Simshauser, Chief Economist at AGL Energy and co-author of this report, The Energy Market Death Spiral, Rethinking Customer Hardship. And we'll have a link to that on our website. Very interested in your thoughts, though I have also already got a lot of thoughts from you about energy. Thank you very much indeed.